Welcome to a Single Serving Podcast. I'm your host, Shaney Silver. I started this podcast because whenever I saw content for single women, it was about dating, how to date better, how to survive dating, and I know that we deserve more than that. So I created this podcast to change the way being single is seen, discussed, and felt, and I'm so happy to have you here with me. I hope you'll also consider joining the Facebook group for this podcast. It's become a really supportive community full of people sharing stories and encouraging one another and actually meeting up in real life too. There are three main ways that you can support this podcast. The first is simply share it. Share it with someone who needs to hear it, share it with your family, share it with your friends, anybody who could use a change in perspective when it comes to being single. The second way is you can rate and review this podcast on iTunes. It takes 2 seconds and it's a huge deal that really helps podcasters get more visibility and continue to do their work. And then the third way is you can become a patron of mine on Patreon. Patreon is a platform that helps independent creators earn money for creating the work that people enjoy. So there are multiple tiers that you can join, but my favorite one is a $5 tier that comes with an extra bonus episode of this podcast every single month. So there will be a link to it below. Check it out. And in the meantime, thank you so much for joining me. You know, when you sit down to do something and there's like great relief in having sat down, but then you realize you've forgotten to do something that now requires you to get back up again? That just happened. I just opened my window to let in a mildly humid fall breeze. And then I realized I needed to record this for you. And you don't need to hear the motorcycles on the street and random sidewalk chatter. That's not something you need. So I did get up and shut the window for you. You are quite welcome. This is a single serving podcast. I hope that's the podcast you intended to listen to. If it's not, stick around anyway. See if you like it. You never know. I am Shaney Silver. I host this podcast. I talk a lot about how being single isn't the worst thing ever, even though that's what society has told us since we were born. And I try to change that narrative because I'm really happy and really single. And if I can be this way, I think other people can too, if they want to be. I talk a lot about things like deleting your dating apps if you don't like them. If you're not having fun there, you don't have to be there. That's just the way that goes. If you are having fun on dating apps, keep having fun. Do what you like to do. I'm happy to have all of you listening today. I am joined by Sutanya Dakers, who, can I just tell you, I have wanted to talk about food and cooking on this podcast for a very long time. I love both of those things. I didn't always. I came into them, I guess, around my early to mid 30s, and they have just been bringing me so much joy, especially as a single person and cooking for myself. I found a lot of joy in that. And so I wanted to talk about this for a while. And when I saw Sutanya's Instagram and her podcast, which is called Dinner for One, I knew that you guys would want to hear from her. And I certainly knew that I wanted to have a chat with her. She is an American living in Paris. So we're friends now, whether or not she knows that. Hi, Sutanya, if you're listening, we're friends, just to throw that out there. It's a really fun episode. I love this conversation. I'm so happy to share it with you. Happy October to my entire coven who loves this month and who loves Halloween. If you like a ridiculous amount of Halloween content, you can follow me on Instagram. If you don't, you can follow this podcast on Instagram. I promise not to make it all about Halloween and cats, even though I could. They're my accounts. I can do what I want, but I will respect those who don't enjoy Halloween as much as me, and I will leave it to amazing quotes from guests on this podcast and the occasional picture of sunrises. I love you guys so much. Thank you for listening to this podcast. It means a lot to me that you do that. It also means so much to me when you rate, review, and share this podcast with people you know who might like to hear it, who might need to hear it. And I also really want to say thank you to all of my Patreon patrons who are keeping this podcast running. Keeping it on the air. Is this the air? I don't know if this is the air. Whatever it is. Keeping it in your headphones. The Patreon patrons who support me and my work on this podcast are the reason you're listening to it now. So thank you to all of my Patreon patrons. If you want to be one of those people, phenomenal. There is a link in the show notes where you can join tiers like the $5 a month tier, which comes with an exclusive bonus episode of this podcast. It is a solo episode. It is just me talking. So if you've liked the last 3 minutes of your life, it's basically more of that. And that happens once a month. I answer 100% of the questions that come in from Patreon patrons. And then there's another tier that is $15 a month, and it includes the bonus episode, but also a monthly group Zoom where we get really deep into reframing thoughts and feelings and strategies around single life in a really concrete and tangible way. I talk about a lot of different aspects of single life, and I talk about how I used to hate being single and how now I don't. And in these group Zooms, we really get into how, and I give a lot of examples. I now give assignments, which is hilarious because it makes me feel kind of like a teacher. The assignments are optional and you don't have to write anything, I promise. They're just really fun chats, and I get to see all of your faces and connect with you. And that means so much to me as a creator who, as she's recording this to you, is staring into a computer screen with GarageBand on it. So your faces are preferable to that by a mile. Join the Patreon if you'd like to. There are also free ways to support this podcast, and that is by sharing it, rating it, reviewing it, singing it from the rooftops, however you tell people about things you enjoy. I'm going to go ahead and start the episode. It's usually around times like this that I'm like, Shani, this intro is terrible. Delete it and start over. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to live my truth. I'm going to keep playing it for you. I just want everybody to stay safe and healthy this fall, this Halloween season. Take care of yourselves. Wear your masks. Wash your hands. Disinfect everything. We're going to be fine. At the end of the day, we're going to be fine. Enjoy this episode. I really do. And without further ado, here is Sutanya Dakers. Anyone who's been listening to this podcast is probably sick to death of me talking about how much I want to live abroad. So we will get into that. And we will also get into things like cooking for one person, which is a topic I have wanted on this podcast since it began. So welcome, Sutanya, to a single serving podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for spending a rainy Friday afternoon in Paris with me. This is, I mean, it's a sunny, mildly hazy day in Brooklyn. Nothing remarkable is happening. So thank you. This is a bright spot for me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
First, before we get into anything, what would you want an audience of single people to know about you as we begin our chat together?
I'm a Jamaican born, Bronx raised, American expat currently living in Paris and the host of my own podcast, Dinner for One.
I love talking to podcast hosts because you know their audio setup is just fine. it's such a comfort. They're comfortable in the medium. It's like, although many of my guests are, like, nobody's awkward, but like, it's just nice talking to a fellow podcaster who gets it. And who is super forgiving with me and my audio issues because they know sometimes how clunky it can be. And you are an expat. You are an American expat. Can I tell you, on the list of dreams of mine, there is nothing greater. I keep trying to legally make it happen, and it just seems so hard for me. I'm also a freelancer, which does not make me very attractive to any country in the world, but maybe someday they'll change their minds.
I was going to say, because you're a freelancer, you could do a lot of European countries. They allow American citizens to live in the country for 3 months without a visa. So you could do like 3 months stints here, you know, here and there. That's an option until you can figure out like a legal way of, and then you have other countries that are a bit easier to move to, like Germany, for example, is quite easy for Americans to move to. I think France and the UK are some of the hardest ones, but it's possible. It's just maybe you have to like stay in like that gray area.
It's possible, and believe you me, as we approach November, I am doing research just in case. I have looked into France is actually a possibility. There is a way for freelancers to move to France on like a 12-month visa that you renew once a year. And the UK is stone cold impossible. Yeah. Not going to happen for me unless I marry a British man. If you know one, tell him about a single serving podcast. Germany also is very appealing to me as well, because it is possible. It's possible in all these places, but I like your first idea, which is test it out a little bit on that 3-month tourist visa. Not that anyone needs to know my life, but like Brooklyn is very expensive. And I've been thinking, especially as we're all in this pandemic and we're so isolated, about moving somewhere in the country that is a little bit less expensive, maybe has a little bit more family of mine or friends of mine or both of those things. And then just spending a few months out of the year
living in various countries and picking a favorite. I don't know. I'm not important. How did you get to Paris?
You are very important. That's also, that's quite the, like, the decision, you know, it's quite a big decision to make.
It's
big.
Yeah.
You know, the kind of thought process that goes into that is very interesting because, you know, you're like uprooting yourself, whether, even if it's going back home to your family and friends, it's still like a, be a huge change from your current life in Brooklyn, I'm assuming.
Yeah, complete 360 that I don't, to be perfectly honest, I don't know that I'm going to do it because I kind of like it here. Anyway, I'm originally from Fort Worth, Texas, and okay. I have a really good amount of friends living in both Los Angeles and New Orleans
okay.
and Dallas. So there are a few cities on a short list, but I also have just been enamored with Brooklyn and New York since I moved here. It's just, you can fully understand this. If you're in the middle of a global pandemic, the rent is no longer worth it because we're not living here, really. Yeah. We're living in concrete squares with couches.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But... Yeah. So how did you come to live in Paris? Because a lot of what we'll talk about is your life there, and I'm curious what led you to Paris and what you think about living there as an expat.
So I moved to Paris because, like many American women, I met a French man. We met at Finelli's Cafe in Soho, and we got married. Then we fell in love and then we got married. And I moved to Paris to be with him. Unfortunately, our marriage did not last, which happens. So, you know, c'est la vie, as the French say. But I decided to stay. My decision to stay was something that kind of happened naturally. Like, instead of my kind of gut reaction after we broke up was to go back to New York, but I had a job and I had my friends, and I said, okay, I'm going to stay here for, you know, the rest of 6 months until summertime. And then I'll go home for the summer and see my family. And then after about 3 weeks at my mom's house, I was like, ooh, I'm ready to go back to Paris. But I still wasn't sure if I was going to stay here, right? Because the reason I was here, the reason that I came here, that was no longer a reason for me to stay. But then, you know, I said, okay, I'm going to give it 3 months. And then 3 months turned into 6 months. And then this and that and that and that. And then now I'm here and I'm just here by myself.
I like the evolution of that decision-making process. It went from one made in a pair to one made independently.
Yeah, for sure.
I know a few women in my life who have moved abroad in relationships, and those relationships have not been till death do us part situations, which many aren't. And that's not a bad thing around this podcast. And it's really cool to me to see that switch in, no, I'm at the helm of this decision and I'm deciding where I'm going to live. And I'm going to live in Paris, which is the best place to live, if you're asking me.
I can't complain because I've learned that from the French people, how cathartic it is. Just like, but I can't, I'm very grateful and lucky. And I feel really blessed to live in such a wonderful country and a beautiful city.
It is all those things. Infrastructurally, a little confusing to me. The last time I was in Paris, I typically go once a year when there's not a global pandemic. There's a jewelry store that I love in the Marais that I had been following on Instagram for over a year. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited. I get to shop it in person. It's like not crazy expensive and it's beautiful. It's like very much my style. It's called Luya 2.
I don't think I know. Okay.
And I must have gone to that store 5 times in 3 days and every single time it was closed.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah.
Do you do business? Do you ever want to make money? I have money I want to give you. Please open. And I could see, you know how they'll open those like sliding doors, like garage doors, like this much? I could see feet. I knew there were people in there and they just wouldn't let me buy jewelry. And I was very salty about it because you're in Paris, you're on foot. To go back to a place once you've left that area is a big deal. There are only so many cups of coffee I can buy at Fragment. Like, open.
That's something that I've just gotten used to living here. Like that sort of thing annoyed me too when I, you know, first moved here. And now I'm just kind of like the other day, for example, I was getting a new bed the other day and like 2 weeks ago. And when I ordered my bed, I was told that it was going to arrive on September 12th. And the delivery person was going to call me either the Friday, before or Saturday morning, so the 12th of the Saturday, and let me know, and schedule a time with me.
Of course.
Okay. Wednesday rolls around. I'm at lunch with friends. I get a phone call and it's a delivery person like, "Hey ma'am, we're going to be at your place in half an hour." And I was like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa." Like I was told that it was going to be Saturday and you would call me before, blah, 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 blah. And they were like, "Well, we have your bed. I was like, "Well, can you come back Saturday?" And they said, "No." And I said, "Well, what are options?" They said, "Okay, well, we have a few other deliveries in your neighborhood. If you're home by 4:30, we can do that." And I said, "Fine, no problem." So I like shoved food down my throat, ran home, got here at 4, texted them and said, "I'm here." No news. I had to call and harass. They did not arrive until 7 p.m. And I had a spinning class at 7:15. If I missed that spinning class, I would have been so angry. But I also learned how to stand up for myself here and to get things done. Because I feel like in the U.S., we tend to be like very nice. Like, "Will you please? I would really appreciate it if you could like blah, blah, blah." And here it's just like, "But you have to do it. Like, you have to be so like, you have to be so straightforward." I'm mostly aggressive, but it's like no nonsense. It's like, "You have to do this." And if someone says no, you can't take no for an answer. You have to be like, but why? You have to like constantly negotiate and like to get things done. I just want to be like a nice American.
And you're standing up for yourself in another language, which I find so impressive. French is the hardest language for me to learn. I've been trying for years. And it's just like, sometimes I just give up and I'm like, you know what? I'll just point.
It helps living here. When I moved here, my French was abysmal, even though I studied it in high school and college. But it just took living here and being around French people and having French friends and working in a French environment, watching French TV, just being surrounded by the language. That's how I picked it up. I'm still, in my opinion, I'm far from fluent. I can speak, I understand everything, but I'm definitely not as fluid in French pre 3 glasses of wine as I am in English.
Which is arguably when some of the best conversations happen and like you want to be like current when that's going on. Mm-hmm. I studied Spanish in high school because I'm from Texas and I thought that would be super useful. Mm-hmm. And it would have been if they really taught you Spanish in high school. They don't. They teach you vocabulary that you put on a test and maybe get a B-. That is the extent of my Spanish. And the extent of my French is whatever Duolingo has taught me in 2 years, like plus Amelie. If they say it in Amelie, I've got you.
Okay. Is it because you've watched it like 367 times?
Sometimes it's just the company I keep. Sometimes it's just on in the background. It's either that or Moonstruck is on in the background when I don't have a new podcast to listen to. That's what's happening in this house. Among like endless sticks of incense, which you can see billowing across my face right now. I got some new shit delivered this morning and I didn't want to wait to try it. So I'm like, "Oh, okay."
Yeah, sorry, don't worry about it.
Casual. Tell everyone, what is Dinner for One?
So Dinner for One, it's a lot of things. I really need to work on my elevator pitch because I always go into this like 20-minute, like,
I do the same thing.
If you look, if you follow the Instagram or you go on the website, the simplest way I've been able to capture the essence of Dinner for One, it's an audio exploration of what happens when the Paris fantasy ends and real life begins. So I kind of consider it like my modern fairy tale in the sense that, or my version of a modern fairy tale, in the sense that I met this French man, swept off my feet. We did like a 3-year long distance relationship. I was, it was like back and forth, Paris, New York, like how sexy is that? Got married, fell in love, then got married. And then, that didn't work out, but I've been able to make Paris my own and I use food as my kind of like self-care tool. You have different ways of, of performing self-care. There are different things that bring people that kind of joy and sense of calmness and ease. And I found that cooking for myself, it was the easiest way for me to kind of show myself love and affection. And I also used it as a way of proving to myself that if I can do something nice for myself, if I can like love myself again, then I'll be okay. And I noticed that the better I got, the more at ease I became in the kitchen with cooking, the more my confidence grew and my confidence came back. And I also found that cooking for one again was one of the most difficult things to do, because I was so used to, like, I wasn't a big cook in the relationship. My ex-husband was, but still we always cooked for each other, or when we had, you know, he'd cook for me most of the time, or when we had friends over, like we loved to host dinner parties. So we always had people over. There was always a lot of people around food. So to find myself, you know, like, sitting at the table, sorry, and it's just like it's silent and I'm just eating and I'm just hearing like,
oh my god.
But now I love it, you know. Now I avoided that for so long by going out all the time and, you know, like making very questionable decisions, because I hated that sound and I hated doing that. And now I look forward to it.
Oh, the sound of a fork on a plate is such a mood. Mm-hmm. And everybody listening right now will have heard that sound and know exactly what that sound means. And I like that you chose to hear it differently, because that means we can. That's, oh my God, nobody has ever brought up that sound to me. And this is why I'm having such a reaction to it. I'm like, holy shit, that'll stop your heart for a second.
And it's almost traumatizing. I mean, it is for me in the beginning, before I started Dinner for One, and I would, like, I don't know, like, be eating some kind of like weird cereal, like frozen shit, I don't know. And like, you know, it was like every time I heard the, it was a constant reminder that I was alone. And at the time I felt like a huge failure. This is also quite traumatizing, which is why I avoided it as much as possible until Dinner for One started. And I love it and I look forward to it, and it brings me so much pleasure and joy. And
I think you nailed your elevator pitch. When you were saying it, I was like, this is how NPR would introduce her. It's how I should have. I mean, but I'm not NPR caliber yet. But I think you got it. So I've wanted to talk about single people and food for a long time for so many reasons, and we will get into them, because even when I was writing your interview, I'm like, God, I haven't talked to anybody about solo food in so long, because it's such a, even if you share it on social media, which we both do, it's still just you at a phone. It's not, there's no discussion, there's no back and forth, there's no sharing, pun intended, of any of this food. What do you think single people have to gain? And you've already kind of discussed this really, really beautifully. I love what you found in food for yourself, but what do you think single people specifically have to gain by connecting more with food and with cooking for themselves?
I think that cooking is, for me at least, and I think it's because of my family and how I grew up, like my mom, I don't know how she did it, but she always was able to make a fresh dinner every night. And, you know, sometimes I find it hard to do for myself, and I live by myself. I have no kids. But for me, so growing up in my family, my culture, food was a love language for us. And that's how you showed love. And that's how you showed care. You go to my grandmother's, the first thing she asks is like, did you eat? What did you eat? Even today, you know, I'm a 35-year-old woman. My mom's like, what are you eating? And I'm like, Mom, I'm 35. I can take care of myself. So for me, I equate love with food and affection and care. So like I said earlier, I think, you know, if there are any single people that are listening to this that also have the same relationship with food, it's just a really nice thing to do for yourself. You're literally like making your body stronger, or you're giving into any kind of like crave that you have. Like if you wake up, you know, if you're at work one day and you're like, I really want, like, I don't know, I'm like mac and cheese today. And you, if you don't have the ingredients, you go to, it's also the ritual of it, right? You go to the supermarket, you get nice, you know, you get the ingredients, you know, if you can, you get like really, you know, really nice cheese, fancy cheese, whatever. And you go home, you put on music. I'm a fan of bossa nova. You pour a little wine, you do all the steps, you do all the things, and you sit and you have this thing that you've created only for yourself. And it's only there to bring you joy and pleasure. So why not once in a while, you know, do that for yourself? I think it's a way of just reminding yourself that you're important as well. And it's not always about like everything going out on the outside, on the exterior. You can take care of yourself too. That's why I like it at least. It like calms me down. And I am lucky enough to live in an amazing city where fresh seasonal food is not expensive. One thing that I do on my Instagram a lot is there's a greengrocer literally across the street from my apartment, and I'll go there with an empty tote bag and I come back with it full of fresh and seasonal fruit and veg, and it never costs me more than 20 euros. Oh. And it's all local stuff from within like the Île-de-France region. So it's quite easy for me as well to kind of do that. So
if there's one thing that Americans really need to take from the Parisians, I know that there's this weird American obsession with like the Parisian aesthetic and what have you.
They're obsessed with New Yorkers and Americans too. Don't, it's not one way. Yeah.
Good to know, but we take the wrong shit. I can't tell you. So I've, since some of my COVID fears, have lifted, and I feel a bit more confident leaving the house. I was kind of reclusive for the first half of the pandemic, but since I feel a little bit more comfortable and confident, I have begun shopping like a French person, which is I shop by meal. So once a day, I will go to the grocery store and come back with a bag full of vegetables and whatnot. I have like pastas and things and grains and whatever in the house, but the fresh stuff, getting it specifically for that meal that you're talking about, like creating it for yourself. It is so comforting to do that, and ritualistic in a way that's like from start to finish, you're doing something nice for yourself. Start to finish.
And it doesn't have to be like, you don't have to, it's not like I go to the supermarket. I'm like, what am I going to make today? I tend to like, maybe like, I don't know, for 4 or 5 days out of the week, I will know what I'm going to eat, and the other days are reserved for, you know, dinners with friends or whatever. But I don't buy everything on a Saturday, you know,
right.
Like I know that, you know, I don't know what, let's say, what did I have yesterday? What did I eat? No, not yesterday. For example, the day I made my like little zucchini things, like I knew I wanted to do that. So then that morning I went out and I bought my little zucchinis and I made them and they were delicious.
Oh, how nice does that sound? It doesn't have to be daunting or complex. I think, you know what? I think not having cars with trunks is a benefit to us, because we don't turn into, and there's nothing wrong with this, but we don't turn into people who live by Costco. It's like oh my God, such a mood. You're bringing up so many like visceral responses in me. I knew that was going to happen. I knew that was going to happen because of where you are and what you create. And I've seen your Instagram quite a bit. So I knew that was going to go down. What do solo cooks need to know that they typically do not?
I don't know. I mean, every solo cook is different, right? And everyone has a different relationship with food, and I'm quite comfortable in the kitchen. So I don't know if I know what another cook needs to know. I don't want to be that presumptuous, but I think what people should remember is that cooking, like, you don't, even if you're a solo cook, it doesn't have to be super fancy. There are so many nights I've made like 2 hard boiled eggs. I've crumbled some feta on it, drizzled some olive oil, and added some red pepper flakes. And that was my dinner, and some toast. And like, that was it. It was delicious, you know? So it doesn't have to be a fancy affair. You know, if you're not someone who's necessarily comfortable in the kitchen, but you're interested in cooking, and that's something that you want to start doing, watch YouTube tutorials, fuck shit up, burn shit, you know, realize, you know, learn the kind of flavors you like, you know, a recipe may call for, I don't know, like one whole lemon confit, and like you decide it's too much lemon. So then, you know, next time you make it, you use half a lemon, you know what I mean? Things like that. I think cooking is about experimenting what you like, how you feel, the food that brings you, you know, joy and pleasure. But most importantly, like, don't make it complicated. And even, you know, when you go to restaurants and stuff, the best food, in my opinion, the best restaurants and the best food are the ones that are the least complicated. Like you go into a restaurant and it feels like kind of someone's house a little bit. The food they make, it's comforting. It's the taste good. The flavors are there, but it's not like overly complex. It's not like, you know, a whole drama. You're just eating well and feeling good. And always have wine. Solo cooks always need wine. Sorry. That's the one thing you need. If there's a need and you drink wine, if you're not a drinker, have something bubbly, like Perrier. It's anything bubbly, ginger beer. It just adds to the like, and music in the background is nice too.
If that isn't your Friday night plan right now, it wasn't mine before. I'll be honest with you. I was not planning on cooking tonight because I've been really busy this week. I was just going to like park on the couch and watch Enola Holmes on Netflix. However, when we hang up, it's still nice. I know. But when we hang up, I am going to think about cooking something tonight.
Because you can cook and then park on the couch and watch it, no?
Yeah, oh, 100%. But it was going to happen with a bowl of popcorn for dinner, not necessarily anything involving chopping a vegetable. And now I'm inspired. Now I'm inspired. It's happening.
Yeah. I don't know if you're a drinker or not, but like if you like wines and are you more red or white?
Both. I am absolutely both. I tend to go more the funkier, the medium bodied red, the better, like a light chill on it, something like that.
It's yourself like a lovely like pétillon, like which is like the bubbly kind of like natural light, just like Friday.
I'm in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, and there are two wonderful wine shops that have that kind of wine in spades, and they're a walk away from me, and it's so nice to be able to shop locally and get what you want. And if you do not drink and you're listening to this podcast, I am working on some new solutions for us. Do you know it was formerly a Thai restaurant in Brooklyn. I believe it has closed and now it's only West Coast based.
Why does that sound...
Yes, it was. Yes, and it was next door to Carla from Top Chef's restaurant as well.
I think I've been there before.
They have made wonderful non-alcoholic beverage options for a long time. They make drinking vinegars, or they made drinking vinegars before. And now they make these things called cordials, which are non-alcoholic, but beautifully flavored. Mine are arriving tonight. So I'm going to experiment with that and some sparkling water and see about that as like an alternative to drinking. But I do drink as well, always with a lightly chilled red. There is 3/4 of one in the kitchen right now as we speak that I opened last night and was like, you know what? No, I don't want to drink a whole bottle of wine tonight. I would like one cool glass and I'm going to sleep. it was very nice. All of those things are really just when you describe like setting that whole mood, that is a whole, you don't even realize how much care you're giving yourself in that moment. It's setting that whole stage and really, really taking good care of yourself. I also like what you learn along the way. And one of the things that I've found very difficult as a solo cook is sometimes I'll find a recipe that I really want to make and the ingredients are insane. And a skill set that I have developed, and if you want to cheat sheet this and do it quick, try to make a goop recipe, but substitute all the fancy shit that is $50 a bottle, and you will get really good at substitutions really quickly because you learn you don't need to spend a lot of money to cook something beautiful. Would you agree?
I 150% agree. Okay. I have like the main kind of seasonings that I use for things that bring flavor, like olive oil, salt, pepper. Well, I do have like 3 different salts, but that's just...
Oh, same. Once you start this shit, by the way, it is a slippery, salty slope. It really is. Oh, love it.
Pepper, like paprika. I use a lot of fresh herbs and like, that's about it. And then sometimes, you know, depending on, I'll add turmeric. Maybe this calls for this. Maybe this calls for that. But I have a foundation that I use of seasonings. And then you just add on to that. I'm currently like super into Middle Eastern foods. I'm like a lot of like those kind of like za'atar and pomegranate and all that delicious, like tahini and all that stuff. So I'm exploring that part of my palate. But for the most part, when I started cooking, it was just those kind of basics. And then I just built upon it in the past 3 years of me. It's been 3 years, 4 years. Woo. of me cooking by myself.
I have a recipe I'm going to send to you when we hang up. It's this gorgeous cake that is topped with like a pomegranate molasses tahini drizzle. Ooh. And like pomegranate arils, or however you say that word. Ooh. On top of it is decoration. I'll send it to you. It looks amazing. I love Sahadi's here in Brooklyn for any kind of Middle Eastern spice or flavor. I've been experimenting with rose water lately. Ooh, which yeah. Highly recommend.
Because like because if you put just like a tad bit more, you can eat it. It's like an edible. But yeah, I'm into rose. Yeah, I have a huge thing of rose water in my kitchen too right now.
Edible petals are also something it's been a long quarantine. Like we're diving deep. Can I ask a selfish question?
Yeah.
What's in your spicy mayo?
Oh man, what's in my spicy mayo?
If you're comfortable sharing.
Yeah, it's ketchup, mayo. shit, can I remember? Oh, mayo. I have to be better at this writing stuff down. And also, I've made it again for friends, and I just put stuff in and tasted and adjusted as I went. But I know for sure it's ketchup, mayo. I put a little bit of Tabasco sauce. Ooh, a tiny bit of creme fraiche, a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of horseradish, some red pepper flakes, and salt, black pepper. And I want to say that's it. I have to get better at writing these things down because I have a project coming out that I need to know these recipes for.
The best ones are when you throw things in a bowl
together. But I want to say that's it for a little bit of powdered garlic as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say that's it.
It sounds delightful. That horseradish I was not expecting and was delighted to hear.
A little tiny.
Sure.
It's just like not even. It's okay. So this is I was eating yogurt. Sorry. So this spoon, this tiny coffee spoon, dessert spoon, like maybe this much, horseradish.
The
like
tiniest bit.
Yeah. You don't want to overpower it. Right? But I like horseradish, but not that much. So like, I just want that kick without all the flavor. So I just dabbed a little bit in, but if you'd like more horseradish and put a little bit more, you know, it's up to you.
I'm Jewish and I feel like we have such trauma with horseradish because of Passover. Like none of us want anything to do with it. Like get out of here. It is not Pesach. But it's when used in very small quantities, I feel similarly about wasabi. It's so transformative. It's so good. I love a spicy mayo. And when I saw the picture of yours, I was like, that is the sexiest remoulade I have ever seen.
Good. But speaking of Passover, my ex-husband's actually Jewish. And Well, his family's North African Jewish. So it was a lot of like red peppers and couscous and those kind of flavors. And I really enjoyed that as well. And I tried my hand in making it. I'm not too good at it, but I tried.
And practice. There are some lovely Moroccan dishes as well that I've had at even just Shabbat dinners that have been amazing. But yeah, horseradish and 8-year-old me. It's just, we're not on good terms. We're not on good terms. What is your favorite, like, solo self-care dish to make for yourself?
Ooh, I have so many. 8-year-old Satania would be very shocked for me. I'd love nothing better than a really colorful salad with like chickpea, but like with texture and different things, right? Not just a bunch of green stuff on the plate, but with like chickpeas and maybe some kind of protein in the form of some kind of like fish and pickled onions.
Oh
and
my God, pickled all onions are
that,
so good.
Avocado, like all that stuff. Like that's my thing. So that's one. I also really find it's really only been within like the past year and the early days of the pandemic. It surprised me how much I wanted to cook Jamaican food. It's not something that I typically want to cook because I feel like I don't make it as well as my mom and like my grandmother, for example. And it's hard to find ingredients, a lot of the ingredients I need here in Paris. So when I go to London, I try to stock up and they have a huge Jamaican community in London. So I try to stock up there. So I don't cook it much, but during the pandemic, I don't know, like when we were locked down here in France, I wanted to eat Jamaican food so much, especially like Jamaican breakfasts, because it reminds me of just being younger and being with my family and vacations in Jamaica with my cousins and all that stuff. So yeah, I also like to cook Jamaican food. And one day, if dinner for one turns into dinner for two or three, which I hope it will one day, that's something that I'd like to pass on to my children, if I'm lucky enough to have them one day. And if my spouse or partner is not of Jamaican descent, then, you know, share that with him as well. So yeah, Jamaican food, really beautiful salads with lots of stuff in it. And I guess my third one, you didn't ask me for three, but I'm giving you three. I guess my third kind of like favorite comfort meal, I love a big bowl of pasta.
Oh, who among us?
And like
who among us?
Like delicious, fresh pasta with not a lot of stuff in it, you know, but just with like great olive oil, great, like, you know, if you just want to do like a garlic tomato thing, just like great, like lovely sweet tomatoes, like delicious garlic, just yeah, that's it.
Maybe that's what I'll do tonight. I learned I attempted and was successful, ironically, at making my own pasta a few weeks ago. There's somebody I want you to follow on Instagram. Her name is the Pasta Queen, and you might already follow her. She's life-changing. She has this gigantic Italian kitchen, and every day she makes some sort of gorgeous pasta dish. Please do. Sutanya is checking her phone as we speak, and this, it's necessary, and I'm leaving this in the podcast because all of you need to be doing the same thing. Look up the Pasta Queen. One day she had a post in there about how easy it is to make pasta with semolina flour. And at the beginning of pandemic, I couldn't find regular flour and I was panic buying flour because I bake a lot. Mm-hmm. And semolina flour was available on Amazon. So I bought some and it was sitting in a cabinet for like 5 months. And then the Pasta Queen was like, you can make pasta with semolina flour, just flour, salt, and water. That's all. And I was like, are you joking? So I made it. And fresh pasta will change your life. It really will.
Yeah, it definitely does, for sure.
Like, not you can hard tell to do. Yeah. Oh, 100%. You can tell the difference. It's, I mean, box pasta is still fantastic.
Yeah, it's still pasta. Great, of course. But yeah. There's nothing beats, you know, something freshly made. Wow. Is this, wait, I'm sorry. Is this her kitchen?
I think that's her kitchen. How fabulous is that?
Oh my God, it is. It says, here's some fun facts about the Pasta Queen kitchen. Oh my God.
She's life-changing. She's like, I know it looks like in like Downton Abbey, like that kind of like massive old style kitchen but with modern paint. I don't know her story. All I know is I follow a comedian named Heather McMahon, and Heather McMahon follows the Pasta Queen, and that's how I found the Pasta Queen. And everyone I tell her about falls in love with this woman because her recipes are so fresh and so easy and beautiful, and she's just so charming. And her husband always like pops up in the background. Her recipes.
Tonight, babe.
It's really a delight. If you like pasta, you need to follow the Pasta Queen and get inspired. Yeah. And I want to stress to single people listening that you don't have to make a vat of pasta every time. Get your 1/3 measuring cup out and learn how to measure out one single serving of pasta. It will serve you endlessly well. But yeah, I hope you enjoy that. Maybe that's what I'll do tonight, is just like make some homemade pasta and toss some. I have some tomatoes that need using.
Listen, yeah, some garlic, red pepper flakes, easy. Your wine, your red wine, your chilled red wine. Put on some music. Like, if I'm a bossa nova fan, some bossa. Spotify has great playlists if you don't have any bossa nova, and just like chill out.
Mine are French cafe jazz. Basically, like, pretend you're an Amelie for 10 minutes. Like, you know how Spotify will tell you what you listen to the most of in a decade? Over the last decade of my life, my number one artist was the composer for Amelie.
Have you been to the cafe here?
Of course I have. It was, I mean, as with anything, when you go to like a movie location, it was a little bit weird. But I was glad that I went because I like seeing the real life version. You can tell that they moved so much around and the angles of the cameras are so different and whatnot. But just being in that part of town in general is just like a dreamscape. I mean, what blogger on the
park from where I live, actually. And every time I walk by the cafe, because I'm like such a Parisian, I'm just like,
yes, you can tell that that's what they think of their own establishment. I'm like, you know, you don't have to be here, right? Like, you can leave. It's okay. But it was a bucket list moment for sure. I went to you know, 15 other cafes that were legit and not super touristy. You've kind of already given me such an answer to this question because of the way you describe the whole mood of cooking for yourself when you're a solo cook. I'm curious, do you find that most like cooking for one or solo cooking cookbooks are kind of sad? Because I do, and I have yet to find one that like lifts me up. And I'm wondering what you and I think are missing or what we would do differently. But I love the way you describe the overall atmosphere of cooking. I think that could infuse some positivity, but I'd like to know what you think of solo cookbooks in general.
Yeah, I've never looked at like a solo cookbook.
They don't draw you in the same way the other ones do.
I don't know. I've never really used it as guidance for myself. I've never really been interested in any. The backstory is kind of like never interested me. So I have zero opinion because I've never used one.
Which says it all. Like if we are cooking for ourselves, we should be flocking to these glossy paged, amazing volumes. And yet even the ones I've been sent, nothing really lifts me up as a solo cook. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't feel good. I want stories. I want like good, you know what? There's one book that has been inspiring to me. It is not a specific cooking for one book, but it's by Sasha Wilkins. She lives in London or just outside of it. She just moved. It's called Friends, Food, Family. She herself is a solo cook. She cooks for herself all the time, but she talks about entertaining. She talks about cooking in a way that as a single woman, you don't feel like it's a consolation prize. That book's happy because it tells stories and it's more than just recipes. It's like wonderful moments. It's storytelling and it's atmospheric building for the reader or the cook. That's cool. I'm just bitching about how much I hate solo cookbooks. And if you're out there and you got one, send it my way.
You know, I wish I had something to say, but like I've never used a solo. I'm thinking about the cookbooks that I have in my kitchen right now. It's Julia Childs, Deb Perlman, I have Perzana, I have Otulenghi. No solo cooking. Nope.
You have the holy trinity of cookbooks in your kitchen for sure. I don't have Julia Child's cookbook. Admit, I have The Joy of Cooking, and I have the vast majority of my cookbooks are old synagogue cookbooks from when I was a kid, and my mom had give them to me because I was like, don't you dare throw a single one of those things away. They're the kind where the ladies all have their name next to their, I can't get rid of a single one of those. Really? I also can't replicate their cooking, but I can read.
That sounds perfect, right?
Yes. And oh man, there's no, I don't know if you have a recipe from your family that you will never, ever be able to climb that mountain, but challah for me, there's no point. I am not my great grandmother. I will never be my great grandmother. Her measuring cups were her hands. I can't replicate that. They were a lot smaller than mine. And she's just like dumping flour in a bowl with her fists. Like, what are we supposed to do?
Yeah. It's the same. My mom, in my opinion, my mom is one of the best cooks ever. And there's nothing. Even when I ask her, you know, how do you make this? How do you do that? She's like, I don't know. Just measure it with your eye. I'm like, mom, I don't have your eyes. I haven't been on this earth for like 66 years, 67 years. I've been cooking since I was like, I don't know, 10. So like, I don't know. My eyes don't work and I wear glasses. Okay. So please tell me, is it a half a teaspoon? Is it a teaspoon?
Spell it out. Do you love those old recipes where they're just like listing ingredients? There isn't a measurement to be found. Talk to me for a second about Jamaican breakfast though. I have never been to Jamaica and I don't know what it entails. And you mentioned it earlier.
So the thing that's great about Jamaican cuisine is that it is a mix of different cultures and flavors. Because Jamaica, was colonized by so many different countries, and because of slavery and, you know, enslaved people brought over to the island, so they brought with them a lot of their food cultures and their kind of seasoning techniques. And also something that a lot of enslaved people did was they would attach like different seeds and stuff to whatever kind of cloth clothes they had on, and they would bring it with them to the New World, et cetera, et cetera. So as a result, the food is this mix of English, Spanish, French, and then you had indentured servants from China and India that were brought over to Jamaica once slavery was abolished. So you have that mix too. So a Jamaican, my favorite Jamaican breakfast is fried dumplings, but not our dumplings, and that came from enslaved people. They call it, this came from enslaved Africans, and it's flour and water and that stuff, but there's nothing in it. It's just, it's kind of like a biscuit.
Yep.
And then fried plantains, and then a codfish stew that we make with tomatoes and onions and garlic and red peppers and green peppers. And in that saltfish, in that codfish stew, we put ackee, which is, it's a mix between a fruit and a vegetable. It looks like eggs, but it's not, but it tastes really good. I don't know how to describe it, but I can show it to you. Sorry, you guys can't see it. If you follow Jennifer Wan on Instagram and you scroll down, you can find it. I'm just going to try to pull it up here to show Shani, but it's like, for me, it's so comforting. Literally the first time I ever tried to make it was right after, I don't even think I made it from my ex-husband, actually. I was really sad and I was here by myself and my apartment was a mess because it took me forever to get it to where it is today. And I was just really missing home and really wanted something comforting. So I don't know if you can
see. I can see.
So I made this.
Oh, I would tuck into that so quickly.
Here, and this is the saltfish and then the fried plantains. And yeah.
Oh, I want that now.
Well, you're lucky. You live in a city where you can get Jamaican food. I can't. I'm jealous of that.
This is true. Not only can you get it, you can get it delivered.
Love that.
It's phenomenal. That's going to be a hard thing about leaving Brooklyn is how many different, just walking around Brooklyn top to bottom, how many different cultures you can eat.
Mm-hmm. I miss that.
That is priceless to me. Yeah. Absolutely priceless to me. And I'm so nervous because of everything that's being lost during the pandemic. It's absolutely heartbreaking. I get emails from the infatuation and they list all the restaurants that have closed and it's like a running list. It just keeps running. It's terrifying.
Same here. Although like our lockdown situation hasn't been as bad as you guys, because you know we have like a functioning government.
But
a lot of restaurants and cafes and stuff unfortunately have had to close, and they've actually recently announced that they're closing gyms again. Yeah, they're closing gyms as of tomorrow, and all bars and restaurants have to be closed by 10. And yeah, I think the second wave is fast approaching France and Paris, so that kind of sucks. But yeah, it's all right.
You know, if you list out all the batshit crazy stuff people in our age bracket have seen in our lifetimes, it's starting to get a little much.
How are we mentally just like able to like wake up and I don't know, do a podcast, for example? Like,
we have to light a bunch of incense and snuggle the cat a whole bunch and wear comfy clothes with elastic waistbands and, you know, not wash our hair. I don't know. Maybe that's how it goes. I have no idea. But it's, and we're only like, if we're lucky, we're a third of the way down.
Yeah, I know, right? Jesus Christ.
2/3 left of life. Can someone put in a good word? I don't know. It's a lot. Okay. So there's something on your Instagram that you mentioned very recently that I literally screamed at my phone. And if there was a tick in the Move to Paris column, this was it. What is anti-app singles night?
So this summer, after the pandemic, we're still living in the pandemic, but once the lockdown, the confinement restrictions were eased, I went on a dating rampage because I just felt like, this is episode, I think it's called Dating in the Age of, in the Time of Corona or something, where I talk about this. For me, the lockdown felt, I'm so used to like my single life and my solo cooking and all that stuff, because I would go to work every day, because I would go to the gym, because I would see my friends. So if I came home to an empty apartment, that was fine because I saw people outside of my space. But when that was taken away from me, you know, it made me question a lot of like, why am I single? Is it me that I cause this on myself because I'm so used to my life? Like, what's going on? And I realized that I need to put myself out there more if I want to date. And I hate when my friends that are like happily married, like, just put yourself down. Just, you don't put yourself out there. You know? Just you'll find someone. And you're such a dateable person. I'm just like, am I? Anyway.
May we never turn into that. May we never become that. When we are partnered one day, may we never do that to another.
I hope I don't. And so I went on this dating rampage and I did meet some nice men. There weren't any, you know, sparks or anything, but I did meet my fair share of like connard, which means like assholes in French. And I was complaining to friends and I was just like, I don't understand this app thing. It's so strange. And I don't, because when I met my ex-husband, I was 24 and we got married and I was 27. And then we separated and I was 31 and divorced. So that chunk of time when apps were becoming a thing, I didn't do it. So I just entered into this new world. And so I was talking to one of my friends who's also American, who is divorced as well. And she's a chef and restaurateur. And we were talking about why are people relying on apps so much? Because when I told my friends I was going to delete the apps, they were like, what are you doing? How are you going to meet someone? I was like, I don't know, in the supermarket. How did people meet each other before? Like at a bar, at a cafe, walking down the street, on the metro, taking out my garbage. I don't know. So like people talk to each other. Like why are people talking to each other? And so I got, you know, a little pumpet, which means tipsy, with Kristen one night at her restaurant. And it was just like, why isn't anyone talking to anyone? And I was at a restaurant that night and there were definitely some attractive men there. And I don't know if they were single or not. I didn't go up to talk to them. But I think it's because I felt so like outside of this app thing, I didn't, and I should have. And so Kristen and I were talking and she was like, why don't I just do a singles night? And she's like, why don't you be the host? Anti-app singles night. Everyone hates apps. Everyone I talk to hates apps, but they feel like they have to be on it. So she was like, why don't we create a space where everyone knows that if they come here, the other people are single and are looking for the meeting someone potentially and seeing where it goes. And it ties in nicely with Dinner for One. So she asked me if I might be the host. So I said, yes. And that's how it started.
Amazing. Everything that you've just said is like how I live. I can't, I deleted my dating apps year and a half ago. What, January 2019, whatever the fuck that was. And I haven't downloaded them since because they are removing that ability to comfortably communicate live and in person, in public, in the moment. It's building a wall between us. Ironically, it's building plastic sheeting in between us and we're not communicating.
Have you watched the Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma?
I'm not strong enough for that right now.
There was a line where they said, they weren't talking about dating apps, but I think this applies to dating apps, but social media, what it's doing to our culture and society is making online interactions a primary connection. And it's detrimental to us as human beings. And it's like, yes, because no one can talk to anyone. I have a friend, I'm not going to name whom because she's probably listening to this podcast and she's going to be like, why are you fucking shouting me out like that? Calling me out like that. But I have a friend who I met a guy at a party and he followed me on Instagram, fine, whatever. Instead of asking our mutual friend for my number, but whatever. And he would only talk to me via Instagram. And I thought that was so strange. But my friend is like, this isn't like 2003, Sutania. Like, that's fine. And I'm like, no, I want to make a real connection. Like, give me your phone number. Like, Instagram is not, my life is not curated and neither, you know, like this is what I'm showing to the world. Like, I mean, this is not, and I'm not checking Instagram every day. Like, I'm not on it all the time. Like, talk to me. Don't talk to me through this like idea of what you think I am. Talk to me, get to know me. Not like every time you talk to me, you get a quick glimpse or reminder of what I fucking look like. Remember me, you know, like don't interact with me only through this thing and think that you're making a real connection because you're not. Sorry, I have a lot of thoughts about this bullshit.
You are on the right podcast, my friend. Because we all do. We all have a lot of thoughts about it. And if I'm doing anything, I hope that I'm like turning the wheel of the ship, like reroute the Black Pearl right now, just like back to human interaction and connection. And maybe, go ahead.
So, and is there anything better than like sitting at a cafe or a restaurant or a bar, or not even the location, but is there nothing better than catching the eyes of someone else looking at you, or someone catching your eyes looking at them, and then like butterfly in your, that, you know, butterflies in your stomach, then you look away and you're kind of nervous, and you know, you guys look at each other again and you're smiling and you kind of hesitate, and then someone makes the first move, and even if it doesn't turn into anything, just that kind, that all of that. And there's also something I think that's missing online for me. If someone catches my eye, it's, you know, I'm not going to pretend, it's obviously something physical about them that attracts me on first glance, but then it's the way they talk, it's their voice, it's the way they move, it's the way they interact with their friends, or if they're at a cafe by themselves, which a lot of people do here in France, it's the way they speak to the staff. Like, are they nice? Like, you know, you can figure out, like, are they kind of like a neighborhood person, you know, by the way they interact with the staff, then does that mean that they live in my neighborhood? Does that mean they live in my, like, ooh, you know what? I don't know. It's, what are they reading? If they're reading a book, what kind of magazine? I don't know. There's just something about meeting someone in person that for me is way more attractive. And I know apps work. One of my best friends married, you know, she's currently married to someone she met on an app. A very good friend of mine just got married a couple weeks ago to someone she met on an app. Another friend of mine just bought an apartment with someone, you know, so I know it works. I know it works. And if it wasn't for the apps, maybe these love connections wouldn't have happened. So I'm happy that my friends took that route. However,
we are allowed to be of a different ilk. Yeah. And we are allowed to demand things in a different format.
Yeah. I just want to meet someone reaching for the same avocado and our hands touch. And I'm like, no, no. I'm like, go ahead. He's like, no, 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 no. You, I'm like, no, no, no. You take it. It's fine. It's perfectly ripe. And then we fall in love.
You deserve exactly that, if not better. We are allowed to want that. And that doesn't have to be an insane dream. There's nothing about what you just said that's crazy.
I have a friend of mine, how she met her partner. It was in Paris, and they were on the metro, and they were sitting across from each other, and they kept looking at each other in the smiling thing, but no one talked to each other. They didn't talk to each other. And then they both got off at the same stop. And when they exited the metro station, they went opposite ways. And she said that she was just like, I need to stop him. So she turned around and like ran after him, tapped him on his shoulder and asked him, why didn't we talk before? And now they have a baby. Yes, I think Sam is 2 years old. I think, he just turned 3. Yeah.
Hi, Sam. Oh my God. That is the best. That is the best. Those are, you might not know this, but those are stories that are imperative for me to hear and to have my guests tell, because we have to hear it. We have to hear it happens. We have to remind ourselves it happens. I sometimes get very tired feeling like I'm fighting up against this digital beast, trying to bring real life back into the single person's world in a way that doesn't make them feel guilty or wrong or make them feel like they're just pipe dreaming, thinking they're going to meet someone in real life. They're not. It's still really possible.
It happens. You just have to, hate to say it, you just have to really just, and I think, you know, the apps, because it can happen so, because you're meeting so many different people at the same time, because you're swiping through people as if they are disposable, rejection comes faster and more furious, right? People always got, you know, you always got rejected. There were times you probably hit on someone and he or she is in a relationship, so it's not going to work, or they're just not interested. It happens, but it doesn't happen at the same frequency as I think when you're on a dating app, because you're just not meeting as many people in real life. So I think a part of it is this fear of rejection, because on the apps, it's like if someone rejects you, then you know that you have like 15 other people. But if it's in person, it's kind of like, well, when's the next person going to come around? But it doesn't matter, because I, something that I learned that has been so helpful to me, and I'm kind of sad that it took me so long to learn this, is that someone rejecting me is nothing, has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with the fact that we're not right for each other. And it's great that that person realized that. And I'm happy that none of us wasted our time. And if anything, it makes me that much more available for the right person to come along and to be available and willing to be and meet that person and be with them, you know. And I think rejection is hard and it always sucks, you know. And I'm someone that has like probably one of the biggest egos in the world, if I'm going to be honest. So rejection, especially for me, is quite difficult, but it's a part of life, and it's never really about you, especially when it comes to dating. It's just that you guys aren't, you know, maybe it's just that moment in time. Maybe it's just like point blank, you guys aren't compatible. But that doesn't mean you're not compatible with someone else. Like, you just gotta, as the late great Aaliyah said, if at first you don't succeed, dust yourself off and try again.
I have to end the podcast now because that's the best thing I'm ever going to hear. Can't tell you how much I love a 90s moment. Can't tell you how much I love an Aaliyah moment. In my opinion, rejection is protection.
Yeah. My friend Tina, so I have so many friends. I talk about my friends as if like everyone knows them, but I have this amazing friend Tina. She's a little bit older than me. She's in her 50s, and she is half English, half American, grew up in the States, has lived in Paris for like 20 years, been married to a French husband for 18 years, but you know, she's dated a lot, and she's in the music industry in the States. So like, you know, she has a lot of great stories. And before I had my rejection realization, or epiphany rather, I would always, you know, Tina, I don't know this guy. And she said something, she's like, thank them, because they are self-selecting themselves out of your life.
Say thanks, guys. Yeah. Say thank you very much for this gift.
Appreciate it. Ciao.
I think we're scared. I think we're afraid of the future. I think we've been taught to be. I think we've been taught as women to take what we can get because nothing else is coming along. And the sooner you can teach yourself that that's bullshit, the better. You clearly know this. Mm-hmm. And now you are a beautiful example to so many women who are listening right now. I am curious, before I let you go, who inspires you in the single space? Are there any women that you look up to as examples or just as inspiration? Because I know we have a lot of people we look up to around this podcast.
Single space. I don't know if their relationship status, the women that I admire and the women that I look up to, I don't know if their relationship status is a part of that, because for me, that doesn't define them. It's a part of their lives, right? Obviously an important part of their lives, but it doesn't define who they are. They would be these people whether or not they are in relationships or not, right? I love Zadie Smith. I've been a fan of hers since I watched the PBS special of White Teeth when I was 16 years old. I was just like, I'm a huge PBS nerd, and I remember sitting on the couch and this coming on, and I was just like, what is going on? I read the book and it was just like, this is, this person is crazy. It's incredible. So I'm a huge fan of hers. I love the way she thinks. I love the way she breaks down complex ideas into, you know, very like kind of like simple terms. And I appreciate, the way she, and this is my interpretation, maybe she's like, this is not what the fuck I'm trying to do. I don't know where this woman got this from, but I really appreciate the way she has taught me to accept people and the complexities of people, and to accept my own complexities and to not be too hard on myself. I think she's done, for me at least, through her writing and through her work and the way she tells these stories, her stories, she's done that for me. And I think that has helped me forgive myself for my divorce and the demise of my marriage. It's helped me forgive my ex-husband, which is something I needed to do. It has helped me not put so much pressure on the people that are in my life, whether they're friend, platonic or romantic relationships. And it's made me just more accepting of this crazy experience of being a human being on this earth, and taking the good and the bad, appreciating every moment of it. Not saying that I'm like some enlightened Buddhist being, not at all. Like, I fuck up just as much as anyone else, and I have my good days and my bad days, and I've done fucked up shit, and I'll probably continue to make mistakes for the rest of my life. But she's helped me realize that it's just a part of the experience. And, you know, as long as you don't go too as far as maliciously hurting people, or, you know, whether that's physically or emotionally or whatever, it's just part of being. And she's really helped me just be, and I really love and appreciate her and her work for that.
And I will link to her and her work so that other people can
written, if I may do a little
of
bit.
Course
this is like my third time reading this little leaf, this little book of hers. It's a collection of essays that she wrote during the lockdown, which I don't even know how she wrote during the when it first started.
And it's already imprinted in your hands.
Yeah, it's already imprinted, yeah. And I've already underlined stuff, writing notes. She has this, speaking of love, she has this, she just sent it to a friend earlier. She has this specific essay where she talks about something to do and how the pandemic made her realize that a lot of what she was doing is just something to do. Mm-hmm. And then she tied it back to love. And if I may read it.
Of course, please.
Says, love with a capital L. Love with a capital L, an ideal form and essential part of the universe, like beauty or the color red, for which all particular examples on earth take their nature. Without this element present in some form, somewhere in our lives, There really is only time, and there will always be too much of it. Busyness will not disguise its lack. Even if you're working from home, every moment God gives, even if you don't have a minute to spare, still all of that time without love will feel empty and endless. She goes on to say, love is not something to do, but something to be experienced and something to go through. That must be why it frightens so many of us, and why so often we approach it, and why we so often approach it indirectly. Here is this novel made with love. Here is this banana bread made with love. If it wasn't for this habit of indirection, of course, there would be no culture in this world and very little meaningful pleasure for any of us. And then she goes on and on. But yeah,
just top to bottom poet.
Anyone that has lived through this past 6, 9 months, whatever fucking months, whatever. I highly recommend reading this book. Maybe not every essay will, you know, touch you and make you think, but there's going to be something in here that'll just make you sit with the past several months and the effect that it has had on all of us. And yeah, so
I will of course link to that in the show notes, so nobody panic. There's going to be a link for you below in the show notes to Zadie Smith's work. Lots of it, actually. I'm gonna link to quite a few of her pieces. But in addition to that, please tell everyone who's listening right now where they can follow you, where they can keep up with what you're doing. And also, just very selfishly, will you have a anti-app singles night the next time I come to Paris?
Yes, I can definitely do that. And it could just be literally me and you like sitting in a cafe, and me charming Frenchman with my American accented French.
Let's just cast a net and see what we scoop up.
You can find me on Instagram. I don't Twitter. I have a Twitter, but I use it just to follow funny people on Twitter. So don't
you? That's the best way to approach it. Twitter, you want to talk about a dumpster fire. It's a lot. If you have to wield Twitter to the degree that you are comfortable. And if you're not, don't feel bad about Twitter not being your thing. It's not for everybody.
I can't. I literally just follow really funny people that make me crack up every time I go on. You can find me on Twitter if you Google, but do not follow me there because I never tweet. I'm mostly on Instagram, and it's dinner for period, like the punctuation mark one. And there is a website, Jennifer One Podcast, and on the website you can find every episode, most of the recipes, and little kind of like blurbs, mini essays, you know, where I go into a little bit of detail about what inspired the episode topic. And then there's also wherever you listen to podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, et cetera, et cetera. I'm there as well. And if you're ever in Paris and hanging around the 18th, you'll probably see me like booping and bopping around. So say hi.
And we will. Thank you so much for joining me. This was an absolute treat and such a needed thing for me on this Friday. So thank you for taking the time to chat with me.
A pleasure. Anytime.